We shall fight them on the beaches. We shall fight them on the shore. They will bring us exploitation. We'll bring them their class war. And we'll lock down to the gates as they're spreading vicious lies. They want to dominate the world, and we see through their disguise. If they'd have one big multinational with their corporate flag unfurled, searching everywhere for the lowest wages in the world, then we'll have one big union from Melbourne to Prague to Seattle Town. Wherever they may go, we will shut them down. We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. We will shut them down. Got the chorus yet? That's it. That's And CNN will spread the lies. This is just how it's gotta be. Well, they can have their CNN, 'cause we've got our IMC. And we'll tell the truth quite clearly, though they don't wanna hear it. And they'll try to stop our broadcasts, 'cause the truth is that they fear it. We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. We will shut them down. They'd have a world full of strip malls, plants grown by biotech. As long as they get richer, they just don't give a heck. But we don't want their ecocide. We want a world we can live in. That's why we're here to stay, and we're not gonna give in. We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. We will shut them down. Sounding good. And they will infiltrate us, provocateurs within our ranks. And if they can't divide us, they'll send the planes and tanks. But we will stand together, pacifists and Zapatistas, workers, farmers, the indigenous, tree huggers and baristas. We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. What are we gonna do? We will shut them down. And we will build a new world without the corporate elite. And we will see the day of their international defeat. We'll have self-determination and equality for all. For what choice do we really have but to rise up and see them fall? We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. We will shut them down. One more time. We'll shut them down. We'll shut them down. We will shut them down.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Was Edward Snowden Justified in Releasing Highly Classified National Security Documents? And before the break, Daniel Ellsberg was stating that Edward Snowden had no other path to address the errors of the NSA.
What's your response to that?
He could have gone to Congress, which is the main place that he could have gone to. He could have gone to inspectors general in his own agency. I haven't heard any evidence that he actually tried to take any of these steps whatsoever.
Did he try?
Yeah, he did. He did. He certainly has told Barton Gellman of the Washington Post that he did complain regularly internally. But it's interesting that you think he should have gone to the same Congress that you say knew everything that he was going to report. Congress did know. He was supposed to tell Senator Wyden, was on the floor of the Senate with his hair on fire, saying, if only the public knew what I knew, they would be outraged. They would be furious. Well, we didn't know because he didn't tell us. We only know it because Edward Snowden gave it to the press, and the press told us. Now the rules are changing.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on American shores. Stay with us.
I want to remind you we are in the question and answer section of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan, your moderator. We have four debaters, two teams of two, debating this motion, Snowden was justified. I want to go to audience questions now. Sir, could you stand up, please?
Thank you. My question concerns, was it necessary for Snowden to divulge the amount of information that he did and still create the process that he was seeking?
Ben Wisner.
Well, I think this gives us another opportunity to clarify and to respond to one of Andy McCarthy's points.
But you are going to answer his question.
Yes. The number of documents that Snowden has disclosed is zero. Snowden provided a great deal of material to journalists. His instructions to those reporters were that they, in consultation with their own editors, using their own judgment of what was in the public interest, and in consultation with the United States government, should publish what the public ought to know and should withhold what the public should not know. There have been redactions.
But then why should critics of Snowden feel better about that?
What I'm saying is there is a difference and a long tradition of having journalists compete with the security state over what should be secret and what should be public. If you look at the last decade, what we would not have known without leaks and investigative journalists, we wouldn't have known about torture at Abu Ghraib. We wouldn't have known that the CIA had set up a network of secret prisons across Europe and the Middle East. We wouldn't have known that the NSA had engaged in warrantless wiretapping before this was legalized by Congress in 2008. All of this we know because journalists engage in competition with government for what the public ought to know and what it shouldn't know. Now, what Snowden did was on a larger scale. He gave a large amount of information to journalists, and those journalists include journalists around the world. I think part of what he wanted us to understand is that this is not about demonizing the NSA. The threat of mass dragnet surveillance, of collecting information about all of us in case one of us comes under suspicion, is a threat to all free societies.
Sir, was your question, couldn't he have done the same thing with fewer documents? He have not done more, the same thing with fewer documents?
We don't know the answer yet. We don't know what has still to be published. It's possible that the most important revelation that Snowden provided to journalists has not yet been published.
Jim Wilson, do you want to respond to that?
Yes. Snowden has released in some fashion, maybe he doesn't consider giving to newspaper reporters and letting them hold on to it while they release, but nonetheless, he's released, according to the press, 1.7 million.
According to national security officials, not according to the press. The press quoting unnamed national security officials, quoting classified reports. That information is as false as their testimony was to Congress before.
It's an interesting dance.
We can track back through that if you want. But I think the key issue is what has he provided to the outside world that gets put in places where people can publicly read it. I gave you four examples of four major American programs that were extremely useful, and the blog material indicates that this is material that was disclosed as a result of Snowden's efforts and operations. And we lost all four of those programs, and we will lose a lot more.
So does that concern this side?
Well, the answer I've heard, and it's a question of who you believe on this, is that Snowden said that he had actually the knowledge of practically every clandestine office of NSA. He said he had no intention of releasing that or taking it with him to China or anywhere else, that he took any classified information, because that would not be in the public interest. First of all, I trust his judgment as to what the public ought to know or not know about NSA more than I trust the judgment of anybody who said none of this should be known to the public. I don't think their judgment is to be trusted at all. And I do trust, subject to analysis. It's the Congress and the courts. And as the four people in NSA have all said, it is essential that there be a group of techies, nerds, hacker types, who have the technical knowledge, reporting with full access to NSA data, reporting to Congress and to judiciary, and that's the only way we will get this system under constitutional control.
Does anyone have a question that will be directed to this side?
How could Snowden have approached Congress? I mean, specifically, if someone in his position wanted to have approached Congress, how would he do that?
I think he'd pick up the telephone and call the staff director of the Intelligence Committee and say, I have a very sensitive matter that I need to discuss with you. Would you make an appointment with me?
For those of us who don't know, that is a realistic scenario. They would take the call. They would take it seriously?
Yes. Congress does its sometimes rather clumsy best to be responsive to voters. I think that as a member of the executive branch and position of importance, if you wanted to talk to staffer probably initially and then to perhaps a member, I don't think there are huge barriers to that. There may be with individuals who don't want to be bothered or shouldn't have that job because they're not any good at it. Somebody else ought to have it. That happens. There are 535 members up there, and they don't all do the same thing, believe me.
Can I respond to this briefly?
Ben Wessner, sure.
Yeah, because I think that we may be slightly on the wrong track here. So sometimes the scandal is something that is illegal that's going on that people don't know about, that Congress doesn't know about, and what the proper channel is to go to Congress and alert them. Sometimes the scandal is that a whole regime has been created in secret, that the system deems legal. And that's what we're talking about here. I believe that these programs were briefed to the committees. I believe that the Intelligence Committees routinely approve this and were briefed on this. A 29-year-old contractor calls up Congress and says, excuse me, I need to really tell you what you have wrongly approved in secret. No, what was needed was for the public to know. And once the public knew, everything changed.
Going back to questions from the audience. Sir, 15.
Some could say that we are not free unless we are safe. And we know that there are malicious actors. We know that the intent of the NSA's programs were to get these malicious actors. Why is he justified in the context that we are now safer?
Ben Wisner.
Well, you know, again, I treat with great skepticism the claims that we're less safe. The Nixon administration, in trying to block the publication of the Pentagon Papers in the New York Times, told the Supreme Court that their publication would cause great and irreparable harm to the security of the United States. Now, that was nonsense, and the lawyer who wrote that brief said so 15 years ago in an apologetic op-ed in the Washington Post. I think these claims of harm to national security don't age as well as whistleblowers, who age very, very well. But look, we're not just talking about protecting ourselves from a threat of terrorism, which, although severe, is not a common occurrence. We're talking about protecting our republic. And sometimes our republic is more threatened by what we don't know than by publication of things that also alert our enemies. That's a tension that we face in a democracy. But the cost of democracy is that our enemies have to hear this too. And I think that it's in all of our best interests to put more of our resources into defending the security of our communications rather than being sure that we can listen to every conversation.
Okay, let's hear from your opponent, Andrew McCarthy.
May I just say that having worked in the government for a very long time, it's not unknown to me, and addressing Mr. Wisner's point about hyperbole, it's not the most attractive propensity in government. But the fact that we ought to take a lot of that stuff with a grain of salt doesn't mean that we can't draw a common sense judgment that we've been profoundly harmed. When you give up secrets, the public needs to know. Well, you can't inform the public about the methods and sources of the intelligence community without informing people who want to mass murder Americans. You can't inform the public about methods and sources not only of your own intelligence service, but of the foreign intelligence services that we depend on the cooperation of to keep Americans safe, without convincing those foreign services that we are no longer trustworthy repositories of their secrets. When you reveal not only our secrets, but their secrets, then we lose that cooperation. And that means that we lose our sources of information in the places of the world that are most dangerous to us.
Round two. That concludes round two of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate.
Hear great speeches and interviews at AXA Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
On June 6, 1994, President William Jefferson Clinton addresses the gathering in Normandy, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the invasion.
In these last days of ceremonies, we have heard wonderful words of Christian. Now we come to this hallowed place that speaks more than anything else in silence. Here on this quiet plateau, on this small piece of American soil, we honor those who gave their lives for us 50 crowded years ago. Today, the beaches of Normandy are calm. If you walk these shores on a summer day, all you might hear is the laughter of children playing in the sand, or the cry of seagulls overhead, or perhaps the ringing of the distant church bell. The simple sounds of freedom, barely breaking the silence. Peaceful sounds. Ordinary sounds. But June 6, 1944, was the least ordinary day of the 20th century. On that chill dawn, the beaches echoed with the sounds of staccato gunfire, the roar of aircraft, the thunder of bombardment. Through the wind and waves came the soldiers out of their landing craft and into the water, away from their youth and toward a savage place many of them would sadly never leave. They had come to free the continent, the Americans, the British, the Canadians, the Poles, the French resistance, the Norwegians, and others. They had all come to stop one of the greatest forces of evil the world has ever known. As news of the invasion broke, back home in America, People held their breath. In Boston, commuters stood reading the news on the electric sign at South Station. In New York, the Statue of Liberty, its torch blacked out since Pearl Harbor, was lit at sunset for 15 minutes. And in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, a young mother named Pauline Elliott wrote to her husband Frank, a corporal in the Army, "DA has arrived. The first thought of all of us was a prayer." Below us are the beaches where Corporal Elliott's battalion and so many other Americans landed. Omaha and Utah, proud names from America's heartland, part of the biggest gamble of the war, the greatest crusade, yes, the longest day. During those first hours on flooding Omaha, nothing seemed to go right. Landing craft were ripped apart by mines and shells. Tanks sent to protect them had sunk, drowning their crews. Enemy fire raked the invaders as they stepped into chest high water and waded past the floating bodies of their comrades. And as the stunned survivors of the first wave huddled behind the seawall, it seemed the invasion might fail. Hitler and his followers had bet on it. They were sure the Allied soldiers were soft, weakened by liberty and leisure, by the mingling of races and religions. They were sure their totalitarian youth had more discipline and zeal. But then, something happened. Although many of the American troops found themselves without officers on unpermitted ground, next to soldiers they didn't know. One by one, they got up. They inched forward and together in groups of three, five, and tens. The sons of democracy improvised and mounted their own packs. At that exact moment, on these beaches, the forces of freedom turned the tide of the 20th century. These soldiers knew that staying put meant certain death, but they were also driven by voiceless free will and responsibility, nurtured in Sunday school, town halls, and sandlot ballgames. The voice that told them to stand up and move forward, saying, "You can do it, and if you don't, no one else will." And as Captain Joe Dawson led his company out of his club, and as others followed his lead, they secured a foothold for freedom. Today, many of them are here among us, or they may walk with a little less strain in their step, and their ranks are growing thinner. But let us never forget, when they were young, these men saved the world. And so let us now ask them, all the veterans of the Normandy campaign, to stand if they can and be recognized. 50 years ago, the first Allied soldiers to land here in Normandy came not from the sea, but from the sky. They were called Pathfinders, the first paratroopers to make the jump. Deep in the darkness, they descended upon these fields to light beacons for the airborne assault that would soon follow. Now, near the dawn of the new century, the job of lighting those beacons falls to our hands. To you who brought us here, I promise, we will be the new Pathfinders, for we are the children of your sacrifice. Thank you, and God bless you all.
And now, back to the debate. Was Snowden justified?
Where our motion is Snowden was justified. And now we move on to round three, and round three is where each of the debaters make brief closing statements. 2 minutes each, uninterrupted. Let's go to the first of these speakers speaking for the motion, Ben Wisner, legal advisor to Edward Snowden and director of the ACL Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Wisner.
For much of our history, our privacy was protected as much by cost as by law. It was simply too expensive for governments to track most of us most of the time. Now, because of technology, for the first time in our history, it's technologically and feasibly possible for governments to track all of us on a massive scale. We now know that the NSA has built that capability and has used it in ways that are profoundly troubling to many of us. Now, whether and with what controls we should entrust our government with those kinds of enormous powers is a hugely consequential decision in a democracy. We should have debated this issue before the NSA deployed a global dragnet surveillance apparatus. We didn't. But it's not too late to debate it now and to impose strong democratic controls. Now, I began this debate by quoting President Obama, and I'm going to end in the same way. Just a few weeks ago, he gave a speech in January about NSA surveillance and the reforms that he would be implementing and proposing. And President Obama repeated his words from June. He said, "One thing I am certain of, this debate will make us stronger." The President of the United States believes that the debate Edward Snowden launched, a debate that no one can seriously argue would have taken place without him, has made our nation stronger.
Thank you, Ben Wisner.
I can't think of any stronger justification.
Thank you.
I'm
sorry, your time is up, and thank you, Ben Wisner. And our motion is Snowden was justified, and here to summarize his position against this motion, James Woolsey. He is chairman of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and former director of the CIA. Ladies and gentlemen, James Woolsey.
Thank you. I want to take a couple of minutes to describe one incident in my time as director of Central Intelligence, and it's how I think things like this ought to be done. A newspaper reporter was working on a story, and from the questions that he was asking and whom he was asking them of at the CIA, it was quite clear that he was on to an extremely sensitive operation that we were conducting, a legal one, I would say, and one that was potentially great benefit to the United States, but extremely dangerous. We did not want him to pursue that line of investigation. He was persistent. I asked if I could go see the editor of the paper one-on-one. And the two of us talked. And I said, "I'm going to do something that no regulation authorizes. Would you promise me you'll never say anything about what I'm going to say to you here to anybody, ever?" He said, "Yes, I'll promise." I said, "Okay, here's the problem." And I explained how we were almost certainly going to lose one of our officers and one of his sources killed if we continued to see the kind of material coming out that his reporter was working on. We talked, and we figured out that if he would just eliminate any reference in the reporter's story to time and date, that we could probably have a reasonably secure situation. He thought about it for a bit. He was not used to having suggestions in the editing of his newspaper come from the director of the CIA. He thought for a second. We shook hands on it. We did what we said we were going to do, and the story went forward without the time and date, and the operation succeeded.
Thank you, James Woolsey. I'm sorry that your time is up. Our motion is Snowden was justified, and here to argue in support of this motion in his closing statement, Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon's paper whistleblower and former U.S. military analyst. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Ellsberg.
Thank you, Ryan. I agree with Ambassador Woolsey that that was, as Director of Central Intelligence, an appropriate way to behave, that you were convincing, and that the news editor was right, convinced by your argument to change it. The Guardian and the Washington Post have both said that they have modified, at the request of the NSA, virtually every story that they have written. They did not accept all the objections, but that in every case they have done some. I think that's appropriate. When it comes to 9/11, if anyone here in this audience or at this table believes that Edward Snowden or any of us wants to increase the risk of another 9/11 or is indifferent to that, I think they are being very foolish. When it comes to having gone to Congress, I think he learned from the example specifically of the NSA four people that I've talked about that would be a foolish thing to do. I must say that if you had asked me a year ago when I believed these people as to what was being collected, whether there was any chance of reining this in and preserving our democracy, the separation of powers and everything, with what was being collected, I would have been very pessimistic. Edward Snowden has given me hope. And I would say when it comes
thank
to
you, Daniel Ellsberg.
Solemn oath to
thank
defend
you. I'm sorry
the support.
Sorry you're out of time, but thank you. Our motion is Snowden was justified, and here to summarize his position, Andrew McCarthy. He's contributing editor to the National Review and former chief assistant U.S. attorney. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew McCarthy.
Well, finally, I get to agree with Daniel Ellsberg. I think it's absolutely clear and absolutely sure that no one at that table wants another 9/11 to happen. And you know what? No one at the FBI wanted 9/11 to happen either. I know because I worked with those guys for years, knowing the enemy that we were up against. And yet that didn't stop us from putting in regulations to the point that 2 weeks before 9/11 happened, we had two of the hijackers known to the FBI to be here. And the intelligence part of the FBI didn't allow the criminal investigative part of the FBI to try to track them down because of the internal regulations that we had put in, because we thought that we could impose more law enforcement rules on a national security problem. Now, we are in an eternal tension between liberty and security. We're never going to resolve it. But the fact is, we've spent now, in earnest since 9/11, but certainly going back to the 1970s, a great amount of our time trying to grapple with how do you impose the rule of law on the demands of war. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't get it right. But the point is, we're now at least at a place where civil liberties actually are elevated in a way that they never were before. And that's something to be celebrated, and breaking that is not something that can be justified.
Thank you, Andrew McCarthy. And that concludes our closing statements. I would just like to ask everyone to show their appreciation for the level of respect and intelligence that these debaters brought to the stage here today. Okay, so it is all in. Remember, the way we do this is the team whose numbers have moved the most between the first and second vote in percentage point terms will be declared our winner. Here are the numbers. Our motion was Snowden was justified. Before the debate, 29% of you agreed with this motion. 29% were against, and 42% were undecided. So those are the first results. A big undecided. Here is the second vote now. On the team arguing for the motion, their second vote is 54%. That went from 29% to 54%. That's 25 percentage points. That's the number to beat. Now the side arguing against the motion, their second vote was 35%. They pulled up 6 percentage points, but it's not enough. The side arguing for the motion, Snowden was justified, declared our winners. Our congratulations to them. Thank you for me, John Donvan, and Intelligence Squared US.
And now for something completely different.